Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 41 of NML Crossing, where we're coming out the other end of Chris's plumbing troubles. Everything's okay. Everything's okay. We had everything fixed and unclogged, and it only cost us an arm or a leg, not both. So could have been far, far worse than it was, and I'm happy to report that of all the scenarios that were laid out to us, it was the lesser of those scenarios that actually played out. Quite a day, quite a week. I am exhausted. I haven't slept in a while. And, like I said last episode, I was actually considering skipping today. But the show, just relaxing and trying to sleep away the day. But I don't know, I really wanted to do the episode today. I don't know that we'll do the mailbag today, so I'm beat, and I'm not sure I can string together a whole lot of words off the cuff. Thankfully, I have a pretty in-depth bullet points, that's what they're called, a script to read. Oh, Lord, I'm already all over the place here. We have officially reached the halfway point of the road to no man's land here. We're in the back half, and we're starting off looking at the flagship. We've got Batman, three issues of that, and then three issues of Detective, all six by Chuck Dixon, and then we're actually going to be in the no man's land after that. I can't believe it's taken us so long, and I can't believe we're almost there. It's pretty weird. Anyway, let's get into today's book. It is Batman number 560, which had a December 1998 cover date. Now, the story, if you look at the cover, it's Mr. Wayne Goes to Washington, but if you open the cover and look at the first page, it's Bruce Wayne Goes to Washington. I guess we can use them interchangeably since it is the same guy, right? So we'll say Bruce Wayne Goes to Washington, Part 1, : The Jackals, written by Chuck Dixon with art by Jim Aparo. Inks, David Roach. Colors, Lee Lowridge. Don't know. Letters, Todd Klein. Edits, Gorfinkel O'Neill. Cover price, $1.99. Now, we open at Wayne Manor, where Alfred is telling Bruce that it's time for them to make their way to the nation's capital. They board a Wayne Corp chopper, and they fly over the debris that was Gotham City. Along the way, they discuss the odd irony that this time out, Bruce will try to save his city in his civilian persona rather than his caped and cowled one. Meanwhile, Nick Scratch is sitting in front of his makeup table surrounded by his trio of devil-headed idiots, one of whom actually gets a name here, Phaeton. Okay. Nick wants to know more about Bruce Wayne, which, I mean, Scratch is this super genius, right? And he appears to be up on most current events. And yet he's asking his flunkies for the Bruce Wayne dossier? That's kind of weird, isn't it? Anyway, he demands the adults find a way to take Bruce out. You know, because they did such a great job with Esty Halivan and friggin' Azrael, right? Now, as he's telling his gang in no uncertain terms to kill Bruce Wayne, a producer enters the room to let Scratch know that he's about to go on the air for a televised appearance. The producer, it might be worth noting, doesn't seem at all disturbed by the conversation she just walked in on. I tell ya, not even Chuck Dixon can make Nicholas Scratch a cool villain. It's, that really says a lot about how terrible Nick Scratch is. Anyway, we shift over to Elsewhere, where some captured criminals are being led to Blackgate Prison by a Sheriff Smith and his crew. Just then, rockets are fired in their direction. Like literal rockets. And with a bot wham, old Smith is blasted to the ground where he's left gurgling in a pool of his own blood. Now, I'm guessing they included the gurgle just as evidence that he survived it, maybe? I don't know. We've been seeing that a lot. It's kind of the old G.I. Joe thing where, you know, someone's hit with something or is blasted or falls somewhere, and then you hear the, just so that you know they're still alive. We've been getting that a bit throughout our run so far. Now, you might be asking, why the hell are we here? Who's this Sheriff Smith? Why are we looking in on these criminals? Well, thing of it is, among the criminals is Garfield Linz, Firefly, who, if I'm not mistaken, we haven't seen since Blunt Trauma. Now, the Devilheads nab him, and he's more than happy to lean, you know, into this turn of fate. From here, we jump to today's episode of Politically Indelicate, which one might assume is the DCU's version of that Bill Maher show, Politically Incorrect. It might be worth noting here that the host looks absolutely nothing like Bill Maher, which I guess, depending on your mileage, might be a good thing. I don't know. Now, the reason we're here, though, is for one of tonight's guests. Any guesses? Yep. Nicholas J. Scratch. I don't know his middle name. I'm just going to say it's J. Nicholas J. Scratch. Now, he's here to poo-poo Gotham some more. And he claims that he speaks for Mr. and Mrs. Sixpack. You know, the average American. And I tell you what, I mean, I can't get over this here. I think the Nick Scratch character might be cursed. It might actually be impossible to write him and not have him come across like an absolute dork. He is just the worst. Now, he claims that it would be irresponsible to spend taxpayer money on, you know, this awful city. You know, Gotham's never even won a sports title, after all. And he compares it to Scranton, only with gargoyles. Now, this gets a huge laugh from the crowd. We get to see here that Oracle, Nightwing, and Robin, they're all watching this show on Babs's black and white monitor? Come on, Babs. Black and white? It's 1999 or 1998. Come on. Next up, we're over to Washington, D.C., where we rejoin Bruce as he chats up his lone lobbyist in the back of an Alfred-driven limousine. Gary, the lobbyist, is pretty much advising Bruce to give it up. Basically, walk away. The deck is stacked against you. There is really no way to win this. Now, Bruce insists that he's got the passion to sway the people. He's warned that no matter what Bruce has to say, the media and the politicos, well, they've already made up their minds. No matter what he says, they're going to cut his impassioned plea down to a nonsensical 5-second soundbite, just to give the illusion of equal time while controlling the narrative that they want to see play out. Yeah, same as it ever was, right? Now, Gary says the media could and would chop the Gettysburg Address into something bad if they needed to. Gary also believes it's foolish that he is Bruce's only lobbyist. He points out how that there are many smaller companies that have entire legal teams, and as far as he knows, and as far as we know, he's all Bruce has. Now, Bruce, who up till now, I believed his aloof, out-of-touch playboy gimmick was, well, you know, a gimmick, he seems disturbed that, quote, the truth doesn't matter anymore, unquote. Come on, where you been, Bruce? Really? Gary plainly says, no, indeed, the truth does not matter. Only influence does. Now, he paints the picture of Gotham's future, which is to say it doesn't have one. The United States government is going to sever it and let it die. Bruce says not to count Gotham out just yet, because he's got one more lobbyist he can tag in right now. And that takes us to nighttime, where that lobbyist, Batman, is about to scare the ever-loving stuff out of a certain senator. Now, this senator is a fellow by the name of Barclay Means. Now, it's worth noting here, Bruce asks Gary to tell him about this guy. Which, I mean, shouldn't Batman know a bit about, like, all of the decision-makers he's going to be running into? Isn't that Batman's entire gimmick? Knowing stuff? Okay. Anyway, we follow him as he swoops inside the senator's condo. Now, Means, he reaches into his bedside table for his gun after he's shaken awake. Batman kicks the drawer shut with the poor idiot's hand still in it. He points out Barclay's hypocrisy in being an anti-gun guy, and yet, here he is owning one, and without a permit to boot. He gets right into the senator's face and tells him that he's not above the law. And he demands the beans be spilled on who Barclay is doing the bidding of. And I'm assuming the answer would have been Nick Scratch, because just then the Devilheads burst into the condo. Let's jump back to Politically Indelicate, where old Scratch is getting glad-handed and congratulated for stating his case for abandoning Gotham City so well. We follow him out of the studio alongside Marilee something or another, who's the star of Malibu Vice. Outside, we see a large gathering of Scratch supporters holding signs and whatnot. Let's hop back to the condo where Batman is beating the hell out of the devil heads. That is, until they produce their pistols and start firing shots as though they were stormtroopers. Batman escapes the place, diving through a window. Now this takes us to the next morning, where Bruce has arrived at Capitol Hill, with a band-aid on his chin after last night's skirmish. He claims he cut himself shaving, which really doesn't make him look like any less of an idiot, especially when we consider that he's about to beg the government not to abandon his destroyed hometown. He meets a woman named Dorothea Hillier, who's standing in for Dead Esty Halivan, or Halaban, with a B, as it's said here. Don't know, maybe Hillier has an accent, or maybe she's making up for all the B's the Quake Master couldn't stay? Editors? Anybody? I don't know. Also, we're going to meet a fella named Bill Hodge, who is from Gotham's 8th District. He hopes Wayne can help him save his constituency, but he doubts it. You see, the bipartisan coalition against Gotham City is huge and only growing in support. You see, the current valuation on Gotham's rebuild is in the trillions. Plus, there's the nick scratch of it all. Bruce asks for some info on the rock and roller. Okay, he didn't actually say rock and roller, right? I said rock and roller. Again, though, shouldn't Batman know all of this stuff already? If Nicholas Scratch truly is, in the words of Oracle, the, quote, man of the century, shouldn't it stand to reason that Batman would know at least a little bit about him? Who knows? You know, maybe Nick Scratch is just a shared delusion we're all having, right? Wouldn't that be a kick? I think we might just work with that theory. Nicholas Scratch isn't real. We're just all imagining the same thing. I guess this takes us over to our shared delusion, where the trio of devilheads are reporting in, and they explain that they just had a run-in with Batman. And they say he was scary. Now, this surprises Scratch, since, to him, there's nothing scarier than three goofballs wearing Party City devil masks. Maybe even dollar store devil masks. They're not great. Now, they promise to take Batman out next time, but Scratch says nay, nay, and proceeds to bludgeon the hell out of one of them with an ornamental figure of sorts. And I mean, there's blood everywhere. This scene actually looks like it was like swiped out of Jason Todd's beating during Death in the Family. Just then, Merrily What's-Her-Face walks in. And she doesn't really seem all that bothered by the blood, gore, and, you know, beaten to a pulp devil head laying on the ground. Maybe this is some odd delusion we're all having. I'm thinking maybe I ought to check my carbon monoxide detector here, because I don't know. Maybe the battery's dead and I've just been hallucinating since Asriel 47. I mean, that might make this a little bit more fun. Now, it's alluded to here that Scratch is going to kill Merrily What's-Her-Face so she doesn't spill whatever beans she might. Though, again, she didn't seem too troubled by it. Meanwhile, or rather later on, we rejoin the Devilhead trio. So I guess that one did survive, and, like, immediately recovered? Anyway, they're on some roof somewhere chatting up Firefly. Now, he's been charged with burning down Bristol, and he's, you know, he's just happy to be here. He says he would have done it all for free, but he's more than happy to take Scratch's scratch, to the tune of $1 million, to do the thing. Speaking of Scratch, we pop back over to Bruce Wayne's limo, where he's watching a Scratch address on his black-and-white television. What's with the black and white TVs? Like, Bruce Wayne doesn't have a color TV in his limo? One of the richest men on the planet? Okay. Now, Scratch is at an anti-Gotham City rally, and he's really stoking the flames here. Now, the mob he's addressing are absolutely frothing at the mouth for him. They chant his name, they're holding up anti-Gotham signs. It's a pretty big rally. Now, Gary, who, you know, Bruce's lobbyist, he's in the car too. He turns off the set. And he claims that it's the same thing every time with Nick Scratch. But, I mean, he's not wrong. But, unfortunately, it's working. From here, Gary decides to share some stats from some recent polls. See, 82% of people polled want $0 allotted to Gotham's recovery. 93% say they won't even miss Gotham City. 70% are in favor of Gotham being hit with a second quake. Oh, God. Gary says it's hopeless. Bruce, of course, disagrees. We close out our issue with Bruce arriving at Capitol Hill and climbing the stairs. Now, Alfred suggests he allow a bit of his, quote, inner man to shine through during his plea. And that's where we leave it. Next time out, perhaps we're going to see the plea in Batman number 561. Now, before we talk about it, let's hop into bat signals here. We got some letters to, discuss. And we're going to start with Jerry in Ohio. Now, Jerry loves the Brian Stelfreeze covers that we've been getting. And Stelfreeze, he's a talented guy, but I think people just really like saying Stelfreeze. I mean, it's a cool thing to say, right? It's a cool name. No pun intended, of course. Kind of reminds me of like when the Doctor Strange movie came out and like everybody seemed to really dig saying Cumberbatch. You know, I think Stelfreeze is kind of in that rarefied air. Now, Jerry, he wonders if this quake is going to leave Bruce Wayne completely broke. Financially, you know, not like the Bane over the knee thing. Jerry hopes not, because he loves how Batman can afford all of his gimmicks and gadgets. He would also like to see Bruce and Vesper's relationship deepen. Now, the Bruce and Vesper thing has been pretty contentious in our letters pages. Some people wanted to see a brick go through her head. Other people want to see them get married. It's very polemic, the reaction to this relationship. Next up, we got Brian in Illinois, who just writes in to say he's happy to see Norm Breyfogle's name in the credits again. Then we got Dave in the city of Canada. It just says Dave in Canada, which kind of tickles me. It'd be like, this is a letter from Chris in the United States. Now, Dave was worried about DC destroying half a century worth of comics history with the cataclysm quake. To which I say, ha, because you want to talk about DC destroying comics history? Well, check back with us 13 years from now, fella. He's happy to see Brian Stelfreeze and Norm Breyfogle working on the Bat books, and he loves Doug Mensch's characterization, specifically the Wayne Corp board and the Bruce Vesper scenes in issue 556. He wants to know how long Bruce and Vesper have been together in, quote, comic time. And then we get some numbered questions. You guys know I love the numbered questions in the letters pages here. One, is this whole no man's land thing true? With a parenthetical that he hopes Batman's headquarters won't go back to being in the Wayne Foundation building. Two, where in the hell is Kelly Jones? Three, is Anarchy getting his own ongoing series? And four, where in the hell is the Batman Lobo one-shot? Now our assistant editor, Zun Lee, has the answers. One, No Man's Land is real, and they also refer us to the From the Den column here. We're going to have a From the Den here. We're not going to go over it because we already did, but it's here too. Two, Kelly Jones is working on Batman Red Rain Crimson Mist. There's a lot of colons in that title. Three, Anarchy is getting his own ongoing, which of course we have discussed, and we discussed it not too long ago. Anarchy is going to wind up missing out on all the No Man's Land action. Ironically enough, he's being sent by Batman to Washington, D.C. And four, Batman Lobo is still in the pipeline. Next up, we got B. Allen from, quote, online, who just says Norm Breyfogle is the greatest of all time. We're told here that Breyfogle will be providing pencils on Alan Grant's upcoming Anarchy ongoing series. Finally, we have Thwack via the internet, who wonders if Batman's becoming more ruthless and violent with criminals of late, and also points out how tender he's been as Bruce Wayne in his relationship with Vesper, and he wonders if there's going to be some major split in his personas coming up. Now, I wouldn't want to misgender Thwack, because I don't know what that could be. So they are advised to, quote, keep reading, dot, dot, dot. Now, as mentioned, we do have that same From the Den essay here. It's the same one we had in the Azrael and Shadow flip book. And I'm guessing we're also probably going to be seeing it again in the first Road to No Man's Land issue of Detective in a few episodes' time. But we already covered it. We already discussed pretty much everything we can discuss about it, so we won't belabor it anymore today. But I suppose I can belabor some points about today's issue. It was a good one. Nick Scratch sucks. He really, really does. Like, all the wind is taken out of my sails every time we go to Nick Scratch, because he sucks. He's just such a dork. I can't take him seriously. don't know if you ever heard the theory. There was a theory going around online. It was like a little playful theory that to explain why the Bwahaha Justice League were all like dunces in the Justice League book, but they were able to function in their own solo titles if they had them, was that like when they would teleport into the JLI embassy, they'd be hit with like a stupid ray. They'd be hit with like a dodo ray, you know, which would make them silly and more sitcom-y than they might be in their, you know, ongoings of their own if they had them. I kind of feel like that ray was used all throughout this issue. Now, I'm a big fan of Chuck Dixon. His Batman is usually really, really, really good. Here, though, it feels like he and our friend Nick Scratch were both hit with the dodo ray. Because, like, Bruce doesn't... He needs to be caught up on things like Nick Scratch and on the senators he's going to be pitching and playing to. And, I mean, I know the Quake has, no pun intended, you know, shaken things up and might have Batman a little bit off his game, but he's still Batman. You know, he's still a guy who's going to do his homework, you would assume. So for him not to know senators, for him not to know who's going to be on this this Gotham panel, that just strikes me as weird. And I mean, Oracle said not too long ago that Nick Scratch is the man of the century, perhaps. How does Bruce Wayne not know who Nick Scratch is? Like, he shouldn't need intel on one of the most famous people on the planet. And conversely, Nick Scratch, a guy who's anti-Gotham to the core, and brilliant, right? He's got a PhD. He, like, graduated from some Ivy League university at, like, what was it, like 16 or 17 years old or something ridiculous like that. This is a guy whose only mission in life is to have Gotham City cut down or severed from the country. And he needs intel on, like, Gotham's champion, Bruce Wayne. Like, he doesn't know who he is. It strikes me as very weird. That might just be part of the problem of introducing someone who is supposed to already have, like, a sense of gravitas to him. Like, when we met Nick Scratch in Azrael 47 or whatever it was, it's like, we weren't expected to know him, of course, but we were expected to understand that he's a known commodity, right? He is a known figure in the DCU. Everybody knows who he is. He's got his own religion. I mean, they forgot about the religion, but he supposedly has his own religion. He had his own talk show. He's a musician. People love this guy. But it seems like the Bat Office wasn't sure just how well-known he was and just what he should know. It just feels kind of sloppy. And maybe it's just the fact that I'm covering the books in the order that I'm covering them, where we're doing them in these three-issue clumps. Maybe that's hindering the experience a bit, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I think this should, you know, not to go all the way back to episode one, but, you know, Denny promised us that this entire thing was going to be a piecemeal sort of thing where you could pick the books you want to read, you can omit the ones you don't, and you're still going to get everything you need to enjoy the story. And with that said, I would imagine that it shouldn't matter the order that we read the Road to No Man's Land books in. I'm thinking this would be probably just as spotty had we read them, like, in the order that they were released. Because I'm not sure that there's any kind of agreement on exactly what Nick Scratch is supposed to be or supposed to do, or even what his motivations are. So we have no idea why he's so adamant about shutting Gotham City down. Maybe we'll find out. Maybe we won't. I really couldn't say. What else do we got here? Not much. Not a whole heck of a lot. This is a rare, I don't want to say a miss from Chuck Dixon, but maybe a sort of kind of foul tip. You know, it wasn't a hit, but it wasn't a strike either. Which is too bad, because I had I don't know why, but I had high expectations for this story. The whole, you know, Mr. Wayne goes to Washington thing, that is or that was to me a really big part of this story that I had never read. You know, it's where everything hits the fan here, and we find out, you know, in no uncertain terms that we are in fact headed to no man's land. I've wanted to read these for a long, long time, and now that we're here, maybe I oversold it to myself, but can't lie to y'all. This was a bit of a letdown to me, but we got two more issues, so I don't want to beat it into the ground here. We have a lot more to talk about when we get there, but I think that's where I'll leave it for today. I'd love to get into the mailbag, but I am at like 72 hours with very little sleep right now. Like I said at the start here, if I have a bullet point script, I can kind of follow along, but to talk off the cuff, I am woefully underpowered right now. So we will get to the mailbag hopefully next time. I suppose that'll all depend on whether or not I manage to get any sleep tonight. You know, I take a sleep aid every night. It's something called Trazodone. It's like an antidepressant, but it's mostly used or generally used as a sleep aid. And I don't know if anybody out there has, you know, takes sleep aids from time to time or regularly, but like, you know, that window you have, like you take it and then maybe half hour, 45 minutes later, you start to kind of feel it kicking in. I had that the past few nights, but I beat the window. And when you take something to help you sleep and you beat the window, there's like no worse feeling than that. It's like a feeling of just despair. It's sucks because it's like you took it and you missed the window. You're just there and you know that you're just in for it. You're just not gonna sleep, and if you do sleep, it's gonna be the worst sleep of your life because you missed the window. That's how it's been the past few nights. So hopefully tonight I can take it and then be zhuzhed off to La La Land not too long after, and we can come back fully prepared next time for a more normal episode of the program, but we'll see. And with that said, it's probably weird that I'm going to beg you all to write in now, but I'm going to do that anyway because that's kind of how we end the episodes here. Even though I haven't read mail for a couple episodes here, I still would love for you to write in so we can have some chats here. You can find me all those different ways. Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com, all the socials. I'm easy to find. But with all that said, I'd like to thank you all so much for not only your patience in dealing with all my tales of woe this week, but also for choosing to spend some of your day with me. It really, really means a lot, and it's been a heck of an outlet for me these past few days here, just having this little thing I do, talking to myself into a microphone. It really helped to get my mind off of it, and I thank you all so much for being a part of that too, for keeping me company as I was rapidly losing my sanity. But with all that said, again, thank you so much, and till next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, start.